greetings once again. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hola, aloha, weenie-how, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadi karup, guten tag, half a day, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan, from the left coast of the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Kilitary Industrial Corporation in the one-party post-constitutional bribocratic corruptocracy of the United States of Listeria. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. And what can I say other than for 7 years, this program has stayed the course. If you don't go vegan, you don't support the troops. Now, you may think that I'm saying all of this just because...
I know, and you're going to be the hottest controversial vegan talk show host on the face of the planet.
But holy cow, with a gallon of gasoline needed to produce 1 pound of beef, all I can say is no blood for meat, no blood for unnecessary resource depletion, resource wars. But aren't all wars fought over resources? Oil and land and water and, you know, land to inefficiently raise cattle, a few cattle, you know, so 1 acre produces less than 200 pounds of beef, but would produce about 30,000 pounds of potatoes. So how do we share the world? You know, we compete over it. We don't cooperate, you know, and world hunger would end tomorrow. If we all go vegan, if we all fed the grain that's being fed to cattle, to people, to humans, world hunger is over. But, if you're with the meat eaters, you're with the terrorists. What can I say? The true axes of evil. McDevils and Murder King, Wendy's and Kills Jr., Kentucky Fried Chicken and Dead Lobster and Up Chuck E. Cheese, skin and snout, that's what a hamburger is all about, and Outbreak Steakhouse and Jack the Ripper in a Box, you name it, if you're a meatitarian, a defatarian, you are complicit in the plot that kills 1.5 million Americans annually, more than all wars combined. But it's a stealth program, you know, it's a quiet stealth program, but it is mad, M-A-D, meat and dairy mad, M-A-D, and it's sad, the standard American diet, S-A-D. It's mad, and it's sad, and it's bad. Bad, what would that be? B-A-D, barf and die, huh? Meat and dairy. Remember, it's the diet recommended by your United States gov-environment, and, if it comes from your gov-environment, chances are, in this day and age, it's going to be bad for you. At least that's my philosophy. Are we a nation of fatties now on our way to diabetes and all these horrible diseases because of the United States cons grease? I mean, it's getting so, you know, I mean, really, if you really think about meat and dairy, they're really about as dumb as Ann Coulter, you know. There was this article that appeared in the McClatchy newspapers by Rob Hotakanian. Whoops, sorry about that, Rob. Let me see. Can we give it a better Hotakainen? Okay. Anyway, it said, are rising obesity rates linked to U.S. farm aid? And the article says, if you're feeling fat these days, blame Congress. Cons grease. Yes, I see what he's talking about here. Quoting here, that's just what the nation's doctors are doing, saying that federal lawmakers are responsible for the fact that a salad costs so much more than a Big Mac. Hoping to produce thinner waistlines, many doctors, including the American Medical Association, want Congress to stop subsidizing the production of foods that are high in fat and cholesterol and spend more time to promote fruits and vegetables and legumes and grains that are not. Farm Belt lawmakers are on the defensive, it says here. Here's a quote from Pat Roberts, the Republican from Kansas, quote, I agree that obesity and health are serious issues in America today. And he's a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee. He continues, however, blaming the cause on the crops that we grow in Kansas and or the U.S. farm program is overlooking the personal responsibility we all have in our daily lives and diets, end quote, which means don't eat this stuff. Don't, come on, get enlightened. Learn you shouldn't be eating this stuff. Huh? That's your personal responsibility. You know. Continuing in the article, it says the debate is intensifying as the Senate is looking at the Farm Bill, which talks about subsidies. Neil Barnard of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine said, quote, the real scandal in Washington is the Farm Bill. Senators take millions from corporations that produce bacon and burgers and other fatty foods. Then Congress buys up these unhealthy products and dumps them on our school lunch program. Companies get rich and kids get fat. Now, there's a little graph in this article here that shows the total agriculture subsidies between 1995 and 2004. Less than half of 1% of the Farm Bill agriculture subsidies went to fruit and vegetable production. In that time period, you had 2.6 million going to apples, 1.3 billion for nuts and legumes, 7.5 billion for sugar, starch, oil, and alcohol, 9.3 billion for grains for human consumption. And what do meat and dairy get? $51.8 billion. Those are the subsidies that went to them. You think it has anything to do with the contributions made to the senators on the Agriculture Committee, like Saxby Chambliss, a Republican from Georgia, who received over $800,000 in that time period. Also, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, $451,000. Richard Lugar, $418,000. Lincoln of Arkansas, $393,000. So many hundreds of thousands of dollars go to your GovEnronment. Obviously not out looking for you. I wish we had a statesman or statesperson, you know, who would stand up for the children and for our health and all. But alas, there is only one vegan in all of Consgrease, and that is Dennis Kucinich. The rest are all just there trying to run for office and you know, show how tough and mean they are, because that's what they think gets you elected, you know. I mean, Mitt Romney, he just, you know, falls all over himself to say that he goes varmint hunting, that he's a real man and he shoots animals and should be elected for that. That's great, huh? And now John Edwards, I see, he's actually come out with a hunting and fishing bill of rights, and gosh, he says nearly half of American adults fish, hunt, or participate in outdoor recreation relating to fish and wildlife. And gosh, that's over, really, that many people? That, gosh, that makes me think of the Gandhi quote, you know, where he says the greatness of a nation and its moral progress can be judged by the way it treats its animals. It doesn't seem like we're treating the animals very well here. And unfortunately, Mr. Edwards wants to provide more programs encouraging rural landowners, including farmers and ranchers, to open up their private lands to hunters and fishers. And I don't know, just when will we move away from thinking that to get elected, you have to shoot animals. You know, it's kind of disappointing to me that, you know, our progressive candidates think that too, if Mr. Edwards is considered one of those. But then again, we have our the most progressive of radio talk show hosts, Ed Schultz, who is taking some time off to go hunting, as he said on the air, to run off and kill for fun. I mean, I don't understand. I respect where Ed Schultz is on so many issues. I just wish that he would come around on this and think a little more of the have more reverence for life. I mean, that's behavior that's more like Dick Cheney, and you know, that's, I don't know, it's You know, what's the difference between hunting and what Michael Vick does, huh? Anyway, this is Go Vegan with Bob Linden, and we're going to celebrate the release of Maggie from the Alaska Zoo, and we have Derek Jensen coming up to talk about zoos on today's program. And I ask you to support this show. You know, it costs $200,000 a year to produce this program and distribute it, and the animals would pay, except they're busy paying with their lives right now, so they need your support in a tax-deductible donation. Go Vegan with Bob Linden, a project of 501c3 International Humanities Center. So you can donate online at goveganradio.com. It is tax deductible. Or make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio and mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147. Thank you for listening. Thank you for not eating animals.
Still eating meat. How 20th century?
You may not have had this thought before, but you, my friend, are herbivore. Not meant to dine on flesh and gore. Instead, let's eat at Herbivore. 100% vegan, that's for sure. Delicious, nutritious Herbivore. Breakfast daily, 9 to 2. Pancakes, French toast, crepes, a scramble or burrito for you. Salads, wraps, sandwiches, soup du jour. At friendly and fun-filled Herbivore. Fill up on falafel, lasagna, lunch, dinner, entrees galore. Delicious desserts, a fine wine will pour. Looking forward to seeing you at Herbivore.
Three burial locations, in San Francisco at 983 Valencia and 531 Divisadero, and in Berkeley at 2451 Shattuck. Visit herbivorerestaurant.com for directions, phone numbers, and hours. Open 9 a.m. daily and late on weekends. Featuring about 200 menu items, see them at herbivorerestaurant.com. It's a fun place to hang out. Bring your friends. It's great being an herbivore. It's great eating at Herbivore.
This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
And I want you to save the date, Saturday, December 1st, Sunday, December 2nd, I guess save the dates, for the Animal Rights Film Festival of San Francisco, ARFF, A-R-F-F, happening Saturday, December 1st from 11:30 a.m. to 10 p.m., Sunday, December 2nd from 2 to 7 p.m. at Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. That is Building C, Room 260. And go to goveganradio.com. We will have the lineup of movies and videos that will be shown at that, December 1st and December 2nd. And then the following weekend, the Animal People Party is happening for Animal Switchboard over at the same exact location, Fort Mason Center, Building C, Room 260, the center of animal liberation of the entire universe right there in that little part of San Francisco. This week we are celebrating the liberation of Maggie from the zoo in Alaska. A very unnatural setting for an elephant. Maggie being released and heading to the Paws Sanctuary. This week, airlifted on a C-17 Air Force cargo plane, although Maggie is certainly not cargo, in the sense of a commodity, maybe precious cargo, you know, when, like, people put up on the back of their cars when they have the baby in the back seat. So, Maggie going to, Travis Air Force Base, about an hour from the Paws Sanctuary near Sacramento. More reason to celebrate. The Alaska Zoo is shutting down its elephant exhibit for good. And, Paws has to reimburse the Air Force $200,000 for this activity. But finally, we're putting the military to good use. Isn't that wonderful? We shut the war down in Iraq and put the military to use like this, like taking animals to sanctuaries. Yeah, we can still keep the economy alive, right? So 12 zoos have recently closed their elephant exhibits. But unfortunately, the L.A. Zoo isn't ready to join us in the 21st century yet. Still wants to spend about $40 million on a new elephant exhibit there, even though a judge has refused to throw out a lawsuit against the LA Zoo for elephant neglect. And with Maggie, she's heading off there and going to be with her family at the sanctuary there. Gosh, I hope I have time to get to this. I wanted to get to this article. What Are Humans Doing to Elephants? By Paola Cavallari, who is the co-editor with Peter Singer on the Great Ape Project. And this was something that originally appeared on page 6 of the Sunday Independent on October 21st, 2007. It says, quote, one of the consequences of the culling of elephants in South Africa in the 1970s and 1980s was the breakdown of elephant societies. After the destruction of their patterns of attachment and of their stored knowledge, elephants started to display symptoms associated with the human post-traumatic stress disorder observed in Kosovo and Rwanda, a disorder including abnormal startle response, loss of emotions, depression, and hyperaggression. Although youngsters raised by inexperienced mothers are high-risk candidates for unpredictable asocial behavior, at the orphanage, baby elephants that had witnessed their mothers being killed woke up screaming with nightmares. South Africa is once again discussing the possibility of culling elephants. That's the nice word for mass killing. It says here, is this morally acceptable? Should your renewed country, oriented toward a future that is more just, inclusive, and fair, allow this? In the past few decades, philosophical reflection in rational ethics, the discipline that aims at answering the question, how should we live and why, has challenged many traditional views. Among them is the idea that serious moral consideration should be limited to members of our species. Thus, before deciding how to act, shouldn't one pause to look at the actual characteristics of the beings in question and at how they can suffer? In other words, shouldn't one ask, what kind of beings are elephants? Provided that we stop to ask this question, the work of brilliant scientists such as Joyce Poole and her colleagues, from which I shall largely borrow, can give us a preliminary answer. Elephants have large, complex, and slowly maturing brains, and their capacity for reasoning is apparent from countless examples when around forest reserves, moats are dug to prevent them from reaching tree plantations. Well, they shovel the earth with their tusks and turn the steep sides into gentle slopes to make the crossing easy. And when electric fences are used instead, they disable them by uprooting trees and pushing them on the fences. In captivity, some individuals develop the habit of plugging up the wooden bell they wore around their necks with mud so that the clappers would not ring and they could move around silently. In the wild, a young elephant once dug a hole in a riverbed, and after drinking, he stripped bark from a tree, chewed it into a ball, plugged the hole, and covered it with sand, only to remove the sand later unplug the hole and drink again. Oh, I wanted to continue with this article. Maybe next week. Huh? Elephants also use and make tools. They use vegetation to rub an eye or to relieve an itch, sticks to remove parasites, rocks to break the nuts loose from the bolt. They actually they'll break the locks and pretend that they're still locked in to fool their captors. Huh? Anyway, I guess we'll have to continue with this article at another time, as we always run out of time here. Send a donation. Maybe we can afford a two-hour show on Air America next year. But we are celebrating the release of Maggie. And coming up next, we will look at zoos with Derek Jensen, his book, Thought to Exist in the Wild, Awakening from the Nightmare of Zoos. Derek Jensen coming up on Go Vegan with Bob Linden, the philosophical writer on today's program.
M-E-A-T-S-T-I-N-K-S. Meat stinks. All you're saying is give peace a chance. Can't have peace if you don't go vegan.
And that is for sure. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden. If you are involved with an animal rights group, vegetarian organization, environmental group, you get an extra special discount from Shalom Printing in Sherman Oaks, California, 818-905-6413. The email is shalomprinting@aol.com. And speak to Eddie there. He's a vegan and has a lot of great animal rights clients. And it's 100% wind-powered and organic ink and recycled paper. So it's shalomprinting@aol.com in Sherman Oaks on Ventura Boulevard at Noble. Well, we are celebrating the release of Maggie, the liberation of Maggie the elephant from the zoo in Alaska in Anchorage. And happily, the zoo will be shut down. The elephant exhibit will be shut down permanently in Alaska. So we celebrate that. And what better day to actually examine zoos? And today on our show, we are going to be speaking to Derek Jensen. And if you don't know Derek Jensen, he's been called the philosopher poet of the ecological movement, an activist, a teacher, author of 10 books, including the acclaimed A Language Older Than Words and The Culture of Make-Believe. Publishers Weekly has described Jensen's work as breaking and mending the reader's heart, which I can say happened to me in looking through his book here now, and which is called Thought to Exist in the Wild. Thought to Exist in the Wild, Awakening from the Nightmare of Zoos. Welcome, Derek Jensen, to Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being on today's program. You know, it's almost like you say it all in the first paragraph of your book. It says here, the bear takes 7 steps, her claws clicking on concrete. She dips her head, turns, and takes 3 steps toward the front of the cage. Again, she dips her head, again she turns, again she takes 7 steps. Another dip, another turn, another 3 steps. When she gets to where she started, she begins all over. Then she does it again, and again, and again. That's what's left of her life. Well, so what's wrong with zoos, Derek Jensen? What do you see as the problem, with the zoos? How did they develop in society? Did we always have zoos? And what's wrong?
Those are a bunch of questions. And the first one is, what's wrong with zoos is they imprison animals. They take wild creatures and they remove them from their habitat and they put them into cages, which are now, I'm sure you know this, which are now called habitats. That's what zoos call the cages. Mm. And they destroy their lives. And so from the non-human perspective, that's what's wrong with zoos. And from the human perspective, there are also many things wrong with them. And one of the things wrong is, you know, we're always taught that zoos teach us about animals. Well, one of the things they teach us is that animals are separable from habitat, and that habitat has sharp edges, and that habitat isn't an intact forest, but instead that habitat is, you know, a cage, whether it's a nice cage or a not nice cage. And it also teaches us that that an elephant in a zoo is still, that's what an elephant is. It's basically a sack of skin, the shape of an elephant, as opposed to all the relationships that she shares with all the other elephants, with the non-elephant members of her wild community too. And then finally, you know, very, very quickly, another big, big problem with zoos is that they reinforce the notion that humans aren't animals and that, you know, we're here on the outside and they're there. And there's this unbridgeable moat, these cages in between us and them. And those are all, and we can talk more about any of those that you want, but those are, in very brief, the problems with zoos. And so far as how they develop, zookeepers sometimes like to say that every culture has had zoos, but that's just nonsense. What's really true is that every civilized culture, every urban culture has had zoos. And part of the reason for that is because we have this innate need to connect with non-human others. They're how we learn how to be who we are, and they're how we learn what the world is. And and so, you know, traditional indigenous peoples would have daily, you know, hourly contact with non-human others all the time. And when we're divorced from that, we end up with this huge hunger. And so partly out of that, zoos arise. And then partly out of, you know, this whole culture is really based on the notion of dominating non-human others. And zoos are a wonderful way, wonderful being ironic here, a wonderful way to show one's domination of another, because of course that's really what zoos are about, is power, is that I can come and go and that bear is stuck there for the rest of her life.
Right, yeah. I mean, you say you're in control at the zoo, right? I mean,
absolutely.
It's not like you're experiencing animals in their natural habitat at all. And, you know,
which, by the way, sorry to interrupt. I live in far northern California, and I see bears all the time. I mean, literally, I see them every single day, except for December through maybe March when they're off sleeping or whatever. But the rest of the year, I see them every day, and it's vastly different because they can come and they can go. And I may not see this particular bear for a couple of days, but I'll see another bear. Or maybe I won't see any bears for a day or two, but almost every day I see them. And the point is, it's a radically different relationship than when I walk by this bear who's been driven insane.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, you talk about some bears, sisters who were taken from their habitat. But, you know, the language always turns things around. You know, it's like the bears have encroached, the two sisters who went to the San Francisco Zoo that you talk about in the book. And the language always seems to turn around when the corporate media look at situations with animals. These bears were encroaching on the humans there and, you know, causing them inconvenience.
Yeah, absolutely. What happened was that the bears were up in Montana, and their mother had been killed the year before. They were independent. They could survive on their own. And then they went up to some ranch, and they ate about, oh, I don't remember the math, but they basically ate about $40 worth of corn and broke a piece of wood off the barn and knocked over a bird bath and dug up some carrots. And, of course, those are just horrible, horrible sins. And for that, they were going to be killed, and instead the zoo rescued them. Rescued is a wonderful term, you know? And it's turned around that the zoo is being all, is doing this out of the kindness of their hearts, never mind that it's been huge, huge money for the zoo. Zoos are big, big money. We can get into that if you want. But the point is that you're absolutely right, that people are moving into grizzly territory, and then when the grizzlies come around and eat $40 worth of corn, then that can't be allowed.
Then their mother is shot, right? Or their
mother
is
shot.
Yeah. And humanely euthanized probably would be the way it's put in the newspaper article.
Yeah, they would never say anything so crass as killing her.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the inconvenience of not recognizing that you're in their habitat and humans are encroaching on their land. It's amazing. But let's look at some of the myths about zoos. I mean, people support zoos for reasons. They say animals in zoos live longer than those in their natural habitat. Is that the case?
Well, that's a bit of statistical sleight of hand that ignores that most of the zoo, or a good portion of the animals caught and put into zoos, die in their first year. And what that does is, instead of taking those into account, it only counts the ones who live to a very, very long age and says, you know, we've got this monkey who now lived for 50 years instead of in the wild, they live for 30 or whatever, and ignores all the other monkeys who died their first year in captivity in prison.
So there's a huge mortality turnover.
There was somebody I was reading who was saying that, and this book was only written a couple years ago, because people like to say, oh, that's the bad old days, but this book was only written, I think, in 2004, 2002, something like that. And they were saying that basically you could close zoos by stopping the capture of animals for them, that with the high rate of mortality in zoos, that basically, for the most part, zoos would be shut down in about 4 or 5 years.
Well, what that's wonderful.
Again, with the exceptions of a few long-term, you know, a few that would live forever.
Yeah, your mouth to God's ears. And people say that to me. Oh, you want to shut down the zoos? Well, where will the animals go? But apparently they would all die off, just being that way in the zoo anyway. Their mortality rate, we know of the elephants at the L.A. Zoo dying prematurely also. We just about have a minute, so why don't you stay with us through the break, and we will talk longer. Derek Jensen, author of Thought to Exist in the Wild, Awakening from the Nightmare of Zoos. This is Go Vegan with Bob Linden on Air America. I invite you to support the show with a tax-deductible donation. We have to pay $200,000 to keep our program on the air, and you can help. We're not corporate-supported, no big groups helping us out here, so it's up to you to give the animals a voice. The animals in the zoo don't have a voice without your help. You can donate online at goveganradio.com or make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio and mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco, California 94147. We need your help. The animals need your help.
I'm a vegan because meat hurts animals. McDonald's, yuck.
Yeah, McDonald's, yuck. Truly delicious. Yes, truly vegan. Don't go to McDonald's. Go to Truly in Hollywood, right there off the 101 Hollywood Boulevard exit, 5907 Hollywood Boulevard at Bronson. And if you're making the transition to vegan, you've been having those happy meals as if they were happy, go to Truly. Get a soy beef burger with bacon strips. Totally vegan, no animal products. They have the cheesy grilled potato burrito, the burrito supreme with bacon strips, and vegetable dumplings are new on the menu at Truly. Check it out. Go to the website, which is trulyvegan.net, trulyvegan.net. Please support this radio show. You can buy a bumper sticker to help this program out. Our creative writers, the creative staff got together and said, what would be the best bumper sticker to present to the Air America audience for the first vegan animal liberation radio program? Well, please buy it from my website at goveganradio.com. The bumper sticker is Eat Republicans, not animals. Eat Republicans, not animals. Wear it proudly on your car. It's on vehicles everywhere, preferably biodiesels and, you know, everywhere, Louisiana even. The League of Humane Voters of New York City is the nation's leading grassroots political action committee for animals. On Saturday, November 10th at 8 p.m., they're celebrating their sixth anniversary at Jivamukti Yoga School. Special guests include Golden Girl star Rue McClanahan and artist Peter Max and singer-songwriter Nellie McKay. The League will also be honoring members of Congress and people who are helping the animals out. So more details and tickets sales are available at humanenyc.org, humanenyc.org, or call 212-889-0303. Also, with Jivamukti Yoga, it has its Giving Thanks weekend retreat at Ananda Ashram, and that's a Jivamukti tradition since 1993, Thanksgiving weekend, November 22nd through the 25th. So go to jivamuktiyoga.com, jivamuktiyoga.com, which is JIVAMUKTIYOGA.com. Register, enjoy, have fun, and let's see, Rational Animals Gimme Shelter Rock and Rescue New York City is happening, and that is Tuesday, November 13th at the Maritime Hotel, and auctions, lots of memorabilia from the rock and roll world. So check out that website, Gimme Shelter Rock and Rescue NYC.org. That's Gimme Shelter, G-I-M-M-E, Shelter Rock and Rescue NYC.org. Today we're celebrating the release of Maggie the elephant from the zoo in Alaska to the sanctuary in California with paws. And we are looking at zoos with Derek Jensen, the ecological philosopher, writer, and his book, Thought to Exist in the Wild, Awakening from the Nightmare of Zoos. And Derek, we're looking, we're dispelling some of the myths of zoos right here, a lot of people think that zoos save endangered species and that their breeding programs are important. Are they? Do they?
Well, I'm actually not a purist in the sense that if a captive breeding program would actually help, then I wouldn't freak out too much, but the problem is that the primary habitat's being destroyed, and so you get these, it provides a fig leaf, and tons of money goes into this that could be better spent actually protecting habitat, which would mean you wouldn't need to have captive breeding programs in the first place, but protecting habitat isn't quite so sexy, you know, it's not, and besides which, it doesn't make money for the zoos, which is really the bottom line, is that the San Diego Zoo is known for, you know, people talk about their captive breeding program for endangered species, but it's a trivial amount of their budget at the same time that it's a huge draw for people to come there, and it gives them lots of PR. And
babies are cute. The little babies are cuter than the older animals, so, right?
Which,
so
by the way, whenever they have a baby, they gotta do something to get rid of the older animal. And so these older animals are often sold to those, you know, sort of phony hunting ranches where, they'll take a lion out and people shoot it.
A Dick Cheney hunt. A Dick Cheney kind
of
place.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's one problem with it. Another problem is that for many of the creatures, once again, once the captive breeding program is put in place, the creature itself is not the same. And that's especially true with birds, that even after one generation, their bones are often different. And this actually surprised me when I was doing the research. I didn't know that part. But that's another problem. And then a big problem is, of course, that this culture is killing the entire planet. And so, you know, zoos like to call themselves arcs. But, I mean, at the very best, they're like a tiny little splinter, you know, that maybe one or two animals can hold on to. Well, everything's being destroyed. I mean, I'm sure you know this. 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. And there's 6 to 10 times as much plastic in the oceans as there is phytoplankton. And, you know, what's the point of doing all this work to reproduce one fish when you're killing the entire ocean? That makes no sense to me. And it's the same with forests, same with anything else. Or a great example of this is there are 13 pairs, I believe, of spotted owls left in British Columbia. And what the British Columbia government does is capture the owls so they can clear-cut their habitat, and then they put the owls in a tourist trap where you can walk from a logging exhibit and take a tram ride, or not a tram, but a gondola ride, and then go see the spotted owls. It's just, I mean, the thing to remember about all this is the zoos are big business. More people go to zoos than to all professional sports combined.
Yeah.
And they're basically amusement parks that instead of having a ride, you go see living beings. I mean, it's not really that much different than
it reduces animals to commodities. We're just about out of time. We've been talking to Derek Jensen. Thought to Exist in the Wild, Awakening from the Nightmare of Zoos is the book. And definitely look at the book for the pictures from Karen Tweedy Holmes. The sections are, you can see the animals confined, and it just doesn't look right. It doesn't look natural, and these are amazing pictures. It's an amazing book. Thank you, Derek Jensen, for being with us today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. And thank you for listening. Please make a donation to support this radio program. You can do so at goveganradio.com or make your check payable to Go Vegan Radio and mail it to P.O. Box 475-414, San Francisco 94147.
GoVeganRadio.com.